And so I'll get to the, I think two other people joined, and we'll get to meet them in a little bit, I believe, but I want to get going on the articles themselves. So the way that I thought about doing this and passed it by Tanya was to, I put together a one pager for each of the articles that just hit on the key points. What was the article focused on? What were some of the key points it made? And what were some of the suggestions that the articles revealed at the ends of the articles for how you could act going forward? And so do we have that? I'm sorry. Yeah, you've got that pulled up. So what I thought we would do is go through the just go through this high level view of each of the articles and look at it from the standpoint as we look through the page, each page, just go through and what was it you liked about the article? What was it that you that it left you wishing you knew more about? And what kind of questions did it pose for you in terms of possibilities for the future? And so if you just kind of jot those down as we quickly go through each of these, then I think when we get to the voting point of where we decide which of the articles we want to focus on, we'll have a little bit more context to draw from in order to make those decisions about what's one, two, three thing. So on this last mile problem, slowing AI transformation, the idea behind this was that AI rarely fails because of the algorithm, because of the technology. That part is developing quickly, but what's failing is the organization's ability to either adapt to it or apply it in a meaningful way. And so they had identified seven friction points, and I'm kind of wondering if any of those friction points resonate with you as you were going through the article or as you just see it here. And what the organization could be doing differently in order to make these make the transformation into AI more complete, more productive, those sorts of things. So what did you like? What do you wish you knew more about it? What do you wonder if what possibilities did it bring to mind? Those three things. Okay, let's go to the next one. There we go. It's interesting. The first and second articles are very are somewhat similar, but what I found is that the way they differentiated was one article was about what's wrong organizationally. The other article was what's happening at the individual level, you know, in terms of how it's actually being applied. So they had two different levels of focus, but the main points here was that with the proliferation of pilots and organizations, that they were finding that there were barriers to implementing AI in a way that was meaningful and productive for the organizations. And so they were looking for the governance aspect of it, what leaders needed to do in order to clarify governance around AI, and how to map AI in a way, or how to map the workflows, the key processes in an organization in a way that AI could actually use it and it could be implemented so that it could then be applied across the organization, not just individually in individual business units or individual departments. So what did you like about it? What do you wish you knew? And you wonder what, or you wonder if. Third article was on
Real quick,
yeah.
I see Janet's got her hand raised. Is there a
Oh, I'm sorry.
question you wanted
Yeah.
to ask?
Yes. Well, it wasn't an ask. I thought that Dennis was kind of going through article by article. If he wants to go through all of them, that's perfectly fine. But
Yeah.
I just had a comments on the first two, and I apologize. I didn't read these, but I read them like over a week ago. So thank you so much for the reminders. The friction point from my perspective, and I'm this is my life right now. I'm helping organizations structure for AI. All of these points are valid. The things that are wrong with data, the things that are wrong with the perpetual pilots and all of those things. But the part that's missing is, I think, why we're all here, which is the prerequisite is the organization structure. So, like if you look at pilots, part of the reason, there's several reasons why things stay in perpetual pilot, but it might be because it's not being integrated into whatever the actual workflow is or the actual core systems, and it's staying on its own. Some of this is by nature attributed to the structure by which companies are structuring for AI.
Jana, let me stop you for just for a second, if you don't mind. I do want to go through all of these
Oh,
just
sure.
quickly.
Sorry. I thought I apologize.
But all the points that you raised are certainly applicable to this as well. And maybe this is going to be the article that we focus on.
Yep, no problem.
Sure. Is this on the next one? I can't tell. Oh, it's Article 3, Collective Discernment. Yeah. So on this one, the core idea is that again, this one had some focus on the failure of organizations to, in terms of how their decisions are made, especially at the top of the organization, whether they're using all the information, whether they're applying biases to their decision-making process. And the line I liked in this article was that leaders don't need more dashboards. They need to be more discerning in how they use the information and how they make decisions based on the information. What you liked, what you wish you knew more about, and what you wonder. So the next one, let's see, where are we going? Positive versus negative. This one was, I had a bit of a challenge on this one, but it's basically what happens when an organization encounters what they termed as negative freedom versus positive freedom. And we can go into more of that if we choose this one to delve into. And then the last one was on the top five priorities of OD, organization development going into the future. So, we ready to do a quick voting on the five?
We can. So we'll do the first poll here just as a way to kind of guide which article we want to dive into first. So I'm going to put up which of them did you find the most useful? It's the general way we phrase it. And that'll give us a nice starting point. This point, we have a clear favorite. Now we got some competition coming in. Right, give it another 4 or 5 seconds and we will share. Here we go.
Okay, the last mile, and then we had ties between AI clarity and collective discernment. So the last mile and AI clarity, I think that we can draw some parallels between those two to help cover each one of those. Okay. Well, let's start with the last mile. So the key points that I saw, and I'll just share these with you real quickly, that the companies are pilot rich, but they're transformation poor, and that the individual productivity gains that appear in these smaller pilots don't always translate into organization-wide efficiencies or effectiveness conclusions. And so I'm wondering, from your experiencing, there were several friction points that were listed in there. I'm wondering, what were the friction points that kind of resonated with you? And if you need to see the one pager just to kind of to refresh your memory on those friction points, we can put that up as well. Do we got, do you have those?
Yep, it should be showing now, I believe.
Okay. So the friction points that they listed were proliferation of pilots, productivity gaps, process debt. They called it tribal knowledge that got in the way. Agentic governance. And in this one, they were talking a lot about the lack of governance for AI. The architectural complexity that is introduced by that, and the efficiency trap. Maybe we can start with the efficiency trap because that one is pretty prevalent in organizations. And the efficiency trap that they talked about, you know, in ISO 9000, efficiency equals cost or lower cost. And so how do you hear about AI being transformative in organizations from an efficiency standpoint? What's the prevalent conversation that executives have about that?
So Dennis, one of the things I like about this article is actually just the identification of these frictions. Because I, to be honest, to answer your question, I keep coming up with, well, I don't know, we don't know, and that's the problem. I think that this is interesting because it is so difficult to tease out what are the frictions, you know, what is slowing transformation. So you know, that's not really answering the question, but a kind of what I like is this is focusing finally on execution rather than a lot of kind of hypothetical conceptual ideas about AI.
I agree
Yeah.
with that. Yeah. Go ahead, Matt. Mark, I'm sorry.
Was gonna say, thinking the same thing, Jody. What I really liked about this article was I thought it really nailed a lot of, you know, what's going on, the challenges quite well. And it actually really reinforces some research we did on some of the challenges with leadership. And I think that's, to me, what really jumped out was to really do redesign work well takes a different way of leading and understanding, truly redesigning for the system and engaging the system and not just relying on pilots, which are usually good for just the folks in the pilot versus the bigger system. So I thought it really hit a lot of the key points, and it's why I think a lot of us, hopefully, maybe why voted for this one is perhaps being one of the most resonating ones.
Thank you for that.
Sorry. I just thought that the process debt was a major issue. It often, and that links very much with the tacit knowledge aspects, or the tribal knowledge, I think they called it in the article, in that we just don't know what's going on. It's not visible. And no one wants to spend the time because it's all about speed and haste and haste and get there fast. And that goes back to the governance question that you posed initially. No one's paying attention to the whole governance process and trying to apply old governance rules to a complete new system. So that's my.
The other efficiency that they brought up that was, in their minds, a barrier was the focus on reducing costs. To your point about speed, everything has got to be done faster, and so it's going to reduce costs. But that also had a negative impact for the organization as well, with all the focus on reduced costs and doing things faster. People interpret that as, that's my job, and you're eliminating me. Kind of thing. Has anybody encountered that in the organizations you're working with?
In my last organization, absolutely, definitely. That was the prime focus. What I was in a telco, so you can imagine what telcos have been going through the last 5 to 7 years, especially with 5G coming in, and hyperscalers coming in behind that. So you can imagine. And it just distracted people from the real issues that they needed to be focusing on.
What about the process questions that it raised in terms of not fully understanding the processes in your organization? What have you guys have experienced around that piece of it in your work? And this may be where Janet was talking about as well.
Yeah, Jenna has her hand up. Maybe we go to her.
Sure. Can I do that, or is that there? You go. You're muted. There you go.
Hi
Thanks.
again. Sorry. You know, I do this every time where I jump in right in the beginning, and so I apologize, but I can't clearly learn a lesson because I think I do it every time. But to go back to what I was saying before, it doesn't. I will put a pause on the processing because that one is truly valid. They're all valid. These are all excellent points as to why transformations fail and why AI is often failing. But the core of it, the prerequisite, is the organization structure and the roles and responsibilities. If you get those right, governance is facilitated. Even the pilots are facilitated because you can, if you organize correctly, which I believe in federated data modeling, that gives you space to do pilots. You should be doing pilots. You should be testing and learning. But if you have a good governance process, then you understand what goes into production, what actually is what is occurring. So all of those issues, except for the process one. The process one's the toughest one to nail down. Now you can do intra-department process work with AI. The real challenge is doing the full-on business process reengineering that has to happen across departments, end-to-end reprocess work. That's the tough one to get to. So other than that, I think that if you have the right work structure, which I am an advocate for, I refer to it as my CFD model, Center of Enablement, Federated Modeling, and Democratized Data and Insights. If you can have that kind of a model with a lot of supporting an AI strategy, a lot of those problems can be resolved. The process one is the tough one, though.
Well, it's kind of interesting what you're talking about in terms of the data, maybe it's the data ownership and data flow in an organization. And the question that they raised in the article, it was around why can't organizations transfer what they learned in the individual pilots across the organizations? And I was wondering what you've experienced with that in real life, and what were some of the barriers in just the technology end of it, the technology structural end of it that you ran into, and that kind of resonated with what the article was pointing out?
If you're asking me that, Dennis, I have a couple of different things that I recommend to clients that we actually did it at Ralph Lauren. We had an actual AI accelerator with the CEO, myself, and my head of AI, where we went over like what pilots have gone into production, what success we've had, so that way across teams we hear about that. On a lower level, in addition to having a change management program and learning and development, we also had communities where people would share what they were piloting and what they learned, so that other people could learn from those experiences and apply them into their own roles or into their own departments. Again, I will say that the hardest nut to crack is the cross-functional end-to-end process. That's one where you go back into the 90s and look at business process reengineering, and that gets that that's where it's really challenging. That's why I keep saying like organizations need to get simpler because chaos is not going to fix chaos. AI is an amorphous technology. It's not fixed, it's not bound. And when you don't have clear roles and responsibilities, not just in AI, but in general, you're not going to be able to get that end-to-end business process reengineering work tackled in the way it needs to be.
Thank
Can't
you.
figure out
Any
how to raise my
reactions?
hand, but if I may, I can't figure out how to do it. Sorry, I don't see it. My observation is that there isn't a clear, and in some companies there are, like Microsoft and Google, but mostly there's not a clear investment posture.
There's different categories. There's augmentation, there's agentic, there's automation, and all of these different pilots are dipping into all of those different things, and they don't have clarity, much less alignment around what exactly they want the investment to achieve, and what part of it is a hard target and what part of it might be aspirational. And so delving into that a little bit seems to help lend some clarity.
Yeah, identifying purpose.
Well, in ROI, the expected ROI in the business case. And then again, their spine. I mean, what's the alignment? Because if you go across all the pilots, it might be, whether they intended to or not, they may have ended up 50% of their work in automation, which isn't going to change the organization structure significantly. It'll change it, but not transformationally. The other ones will have a more dramatic effect. I'll
Thank
work
you.
on trying to figure out where the hand.
Okay. Any reactions to the
Reaction.
conversation so far? Yeah.
Yes, this reminded me, most recent comment of someone from a large health system had said she's constantly being approached by AI vendors. And the one question she always asks them is, what problem are you trying to solve here? Because they can have lots of AI tools, but it's not going to help them if they're mired in pilots that may or may not contribute in an unknown way. But I would like to ask Janet about how can you, what would it take to get enterprise-wide business process re-engineering to go along with AI adoption? Like, what's the roadblock there?
I think that it takes so this is where I get asked often, do you need a chief AI officer? And 95 out of 100 times I would say no. But I do believe there needs to be a role, whether they report to a chief strategy officer, who they report to, or what function they point to, I don't know. It's not in a technology function where that individual has a small team, and they're responsible for the cross department process and agentic implementations. So, and I think that their responsibility would be to uncover the ones that have the most benefit to an organization and tackle those first.
Other thoughts?
Just kind of building off of, the looking at the whole system, the process, the value stream. I think pilots could be really great, but if they're good in one area, they're going to expose a lot. And ultimately, they can expose some processes that aren't working well, aren't effective, and it's going to touch someone else's space. And therefore, if you don't have full agreement, looking at that end-to-end value stream with the key leaders and the willingness to take on and look at work and deconstruct, then reconstruct work, looking where those AI opportunities fit together, I think you might find protectiveness and a lot of things that are just going to keep people from wanting to go along with maybe someone's great idea, great pilot idea that extends into their space. Therefore, going back to what Janet said about structure and roles or and accountability, all super critical. Yet if you don't look at the work first, and see the work first, and then think about structurally and roles, you could have some challenges.
I agree. Jose, you had.
Yeah, I have a general thing. I'm concerned that when we bring automation, large scale like AI and agents into an organization, and we automate lots of functions across various different. I'm thinking particularly of my recent experience with telco, where there's lots of different functions and lots of different operations that go on. If you don't change your operating model and you don't understand what you're trying to achieve, you can't bring these things across. And what happens is that things speed up in one place and grind to a halt somewhere else because people are overloaded and can't cope with it. And you get real bad disengagement going on and real, the silos become worse rather than becoming better. And I think You really need to look at your operating model and how you're going to work with that. And I think that's where the roles and responsibilities come in your design. But I think you need to start with where you want to be going with the whole thing rather than just jumping in with changing the organization. That's just.
Yeah, those are really excellent points. What I found in the work that I was doing was that oftentimes you'd go to a vice president of a business unit and ask him about their value chain, and they have no idea what you're talking about. And so the lack of knowledge about how to look at the work at the highest level before you start drilling down was often an impediment to being able to help the organization see the entire flow from value point to value point to value point until they reach the strategic objective of the organization. So I think the operating models, certainly the value streams, understanding those, and then drilling down into the processes, all those three things would really help organizations start to see how they're really connected. And how they really produce value at the end of the process. The other thing that I was wondering about, again, getting into the data piece of it, the data architecture within companies, have you found that data ownership is pretty well understood in the organization, so there are no barriers with, sharing data or the way data is structured and those sorts of things, or is that not a problem anymore?
Oh, that's funny.
Huge problems. It kind of leads into the next critical too, right? If you look at the clarity gap, it was point number one, data. But I think it's certainly a big problem.
Has anybody encountered solutions that that their organizations have developed
Yeah.
over that, or?
I'll just say what we try to do. I'm not saying it worked. It helped, but it didn't solve the problem totally. We started running a quarterly symposium on what data the organization needed and what people were using it for and where it came from. And that certainly helped in terms of quality and standardization and we looked at it systemically in a way. So that helped. It didn't resolve all the problems because a lot of people didn't understand it afterwards, and they were using stuff without understanding where it came from and how they could use it. But it did help.
Good. I was talking to a friend of mine. He's a Microsoft consultant in data, and he said that there's a lot of concern around AI taking jobs away from people. But he said that unless we find a way to unify the data structures where they become seamless, you're always going to have people who can structure the data in a way that AI can then ferret through it and pull out meaningful solutions. But he thinks that that's a long way off before we can get data to that point. Okay, any other thoughts about this particular article?
I just had a thought about this data structuring issue. That may be a rather old or dated paradigm being applied to a technology that the need for data structuring is completely different than previous experiences. Before AI, we told the algorithm what to do and had to give it the particular information to get a particular result. AI now can deal with quite large language models, AI is what I'm talking about, can deal with all sorts of information as long as you give it access. And so the task of actually going through and being the librarian of data is a I think fundamentally different question now and a different task. I'm not saying it goes away, but I think it's completely different than previous paradigms, let us. I think the thing that about this article that was these are some pretty big generalities, and I think I forget who brought it up, but somebody brought it up earlier that there's actually fundamentally different types of work and the nature of the work, how much of human is it creative versus decision making versus automated, physical processes, that whether it's scalable or not using AI is going to be different in those different types of work. And so if you're on one end, if you're using it as a thinking partner for creative tasks and strategy and exploring product design or whatever, that's not really you can scale the big frameworks and the big questions, but as far as getting just like any other methodology for a creative task, it's not really something where you turn a crank and get an answer. So the scalability of it's different than for decision making, where we have known variables, clear criteria, and can guide employees to make better decisions. That's a much easier to define and scale type of work. And I think so when we're talking about scalability and why we're not transforming, I think it's useful to disaggregate some of these things into the different types of work that we're talking about, because I think the implications are different as far as scalability goes. So I had a question that I'd just like to throw out there. I was wondering if I really had two. Is the proliferation of pilots really a bad idea? Is really that a problem, or is that a phase we have to go through to explore what this can and can't do and what it might be useful for? This isn't known solutions where we have a fix like an ERP CRM implementation. That's a completely different task than what we're dealing with right now. And so the efficiency traps, see, I'm wondering if that's different concern for larger, more long-term life cycle, further in the life cycle of the products and services than the smaller startup, more agile, emerging organizations, and how they're viewing the value of AI and what they're using for. Anyway, that was just my thoughts.
What does everyone think?
I'd love to jump in on that, just because again, and it goes back to my org development, the original OD days, not org design. I think something that I've always really resonated with is the value of pilots are primarily for those involved in the pilot. And I think there's a lot of things in these other articles that are consistent with that concern, which is it's not about the technology. You could do the pilot, right, to prove out the technology or where you're going to use agentic AI or chatbots here and there, where it should work, and that could be fine. But I think the nature of pilots sometimes is more challenging in that you're not involving the right amount of folks in the system, right, end to end in that pilot. And I think that's the bigger issue and concern. And another article pointed out, pilots thrive in conditions that don't exist in the real world. Well, I don't know really what that means, other than my experience with pilots, which is usually done by a smaller group that's fragmented and hasn't involved enough of the system. So I think that's my reaction to pilots.
I'll add on to that, that it's definitely a necessary thing to do. My observation is they maybe don't look at the right things. They look at did it work in this context? And there should be deeper questions around how is it changing coordination or what coordination do we want it to change? And then the next phase of technology adoption is changing the unit of work. And I don't think that most pilots get to that level of thinking. So then they don't coordinate. And then it just kind of stays there for a while. It's absolutely necessary to try all these things, but to scale, you have to be more intentional.
I
Don't you
think one,
think, sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to add to that, that don't you think that often pilots are, as you say, are done in vacuum of their own? And that's the problem. I mean, we can't scale them precisely because they don't involve other people. And they're done for a specific issue. They're not thought systemically into how they fit into the rest. And that's where your processes collapse.
There was another comment. Thank you for that, Jose. There was another comment that started, but I think cut off.
I'm not sure if you're referring to that I had begun. One thing I've seen is that there was a premium placed on trying something, anything. And especially when I was with a life sciences organization 2.5, 2 years ago, that everyone, with different levels of, I guess, feasibility, we're trying something. And, you know, I think that results in, just like the startup economy, there's a lot of players who get started, but few of them scale. So the one issue, at least, that I
I
came
know.
across with data is that in a regulated environment, different owners of the data have different governance on what it can be used for. And that I found to be an obstacle. So different groups just created their own solution and they weren't allowed to share the data. So that was an obstacle. But I think everyone trying something means that maybe there needs to be a center of excellence that bets which pilots should go forward and which need more feedback and which can work together.
Yeah, I think that there probably is. And I think there was a structural solution suggested in terms of having a central organization like that that managed the proliferation of pilots. Well, not just the pilots themselves, but also the how the pilots related to each other going out. But and then to Mark's point earlier about the environment, I think what they were saying in the article, at least what I took away from it, was that they talked about pristine environments in terms of the pilots tended to structure their pilots so they couldn't fail. You know, they structured their data and they partitioned their data off, and you know, all these things that you wouldn't normally encounter in the real world of it. So if I could just kind of summarize the discussion, and I looked at a comparison of the two articles, The Last Mile and the AI Gap. And the way that it boiled down was that the AI clarity gap was around why this project is stuck primarily. It was more local. And the last mile was why this company is stuck in terms of its AI implementations and AI exploration. So are there any other last minute thoughts on this before we jump to another article? I think we've got just maybe it's been maybe 5 more minutes on another article. Anything you wish you knew more about those two articles, the gap and the last mile? We used to call that a Chevron no. could we jump over to Article 3 and maybe put that one up? So collective discernment. What were the things you liked about this, the things you wish you knew, or that you wondered if when you after reading this?
I think just this one just kind of it was interesting title and use of words. I thought I kind of got the governance of discernment and mentioned the board's role in that. So I kind of gathered it takes some higher level leadership or leaders to encourage or foster or support an environment, a culture where you could have some discernment. So I got that out of it, and then it even talked about psychological safety and, you know, trying to promote dissent. And I've been in companies, quite frankly, where, you know, a leader was saying, "Hey, you know, constructive dissent, let's go have it, let's go get it," you know, but just by saying that is one thing. And it's just so what jumped out was this was a bigger, it's talking about a bigger mindset, cultural change to get this, not as easy as just saying, "Oh, let's have some governance to have more discernment." That was my reaction.
Thank you for that, Mark. Other thoughts? I thought it was interesting the story behind it with the bank. Who was it? I forget what the bank was called. But the reason that they failed wasn't that they didn't have the information. It was the way they applied it and the way that they debated it or didn't debate it at the time. And I think the point that they made was you can have governance around that, but if you don't have the behaviors to complement that, then you're going to fall into this trap. And I'll just share this story real quickly. But yesterday I was listening to the radio, and they had a story about the choosing of where this medical center was going to be built in Houston. So everything is Houston has one central medical center, and so it was Bentaub Hospital. They're expanding Bentaub Hospital, and where they wanted to expand it is in an area that it stays within the central mega medical center, but it's also in a floodplain. And so the argument was, why would you build a trauma one medical center in an area that you know is going to flood when you have a hurricane and that sort of thing, because people can't get to it. And it came down to, and they presented this to this panel of elected officials who debated. But the story was about how there was no debate. It was just they understood that it could flood, but they wanted it to be there, and so they decided to build it there, even though it was going to cost more. It was prone to flooding and that sort of thing. And it just seemed to the mirror kind of what this article had described in terms of how the banks failed was the way information is utilized.
Yeah. And kind of a theme here with this one, with the first article, with even the positive negative freedom, if you read into that, human capability versus whatever system changes, is to do this kind of work and do it well requires a level of discernment, debate, some time, some discussion, some reasoning beyond just one person's unilateral decision. And so there could be a theme there going on with these articles that have to do with that.
Yeah,
Did
I'd
anybody?
agree with that.
Go ahead, Jose. I'm sorry.
Sorry, no, just sit. It happens at several levels. The board often asks particular questions that everybody prepares to answer because they've kind of aligned beforehand. So you don't get the debate in the board meeting. Then you get into the executive C-suite, and there's no debate there because it's all been agreed anyway. And then you have a ritual about the naysayers voicing, but no alternative is ever put forward. So it's not an alternative. It's we don't agree with you because of A, B, C, D, and that's it. And it's not either or. There's the and that's completely missing in these things. And I think the article touched on that brilliantly. And I think that's a fundamental practice that needs to be brought in, not just at the top level, throughout the organizations.
It
The
does.
top, yeah.
If you read about failed businesses, Circuit City comes to mind, and Blockbuster. In every case, there's somebody there saying, "Here's exactly what we need to look at, and here's exactly why." And what you just described is what happens. They just say, "No, we're not doing it." I mean, it's there. They just don't do it. There isn't a way to force some reaction. I mean, I thought it was really well done too, pointing that out.
They talk a lot about weak signals. I wasn't quite sure how to interpret that. How did you guys interpret that?
It seems that means when there might be a whisper of dissent or a minority point of view that's overlooked or ignored.
Good explanation of it. Thank you.
I'd have a different experience. I came from a lean background where we always walked the floor. We did the Agemba walks. And that was to engage with all the small things that go on all over the factory and the offices, and even with the customer locations. And the small signals are all the little bits of nuances that you pick up that you don't get reports on because they're too small. And those things never get debated. And when you raise them at C-suite level, they don't want to hear about it. It's too busy, too noisy, and
Yeah,
it's too difficult to understand.
I'd add to the weak signal. I think it's something that's hard to get. It's there, but maybe it's hard to get from the system or data or something like that. So it's a weak signal by virtue of its composition, not necessarily because it's a weak signal. It could be really strong information, but you can't process it.
Maybe there's a behavioral thing as well. The higher up you go, the less safety there is in dissent at that point.
Or maybe you get comfortable. You know, I came out of this, you know, reading this article and thinking about, you know, what I was talking about, reading about these failures. I thought maybe this is just the way it needs to go. There's a point where, you know, you're really comfortable and you just don't, you know, you're not as hungry and you respond differently and you need to fail. Maybe this is a cycle that just needs to happen.
I think Dennis's point about distance is very important, because as you get removed, you stop hearing and seeing things, and it fades away. And that's why I really like the lean system and the Japanese approach to going onto the floor and seeing things for yourself all the time. It doesn't have to be daily. I mean, I did it weekly.
So, and just in strategy terms, when we talk about strategy and weak signals, it's typically about the external environment and how the world is changing, and the fact that we sometimes get small signals of which way the world's heading, it's not obvious yet to the players. Consequently, it's difficult to incorporate into strategy, and people dismiss it, as you've been discussing, for that. But a lot of times in strategy, and particularly board work, about the future directions of it, it's often about the external changes that are going on, and some are very clear and obvious, and many are not, right? So just another thought.
Thank you, John. We've got about 3 minutes left. And so I think that Tanya likes to go through some announcements at the end. Before she does that, I did a quick compare and contrast of the five articles just to kind of see how they tied together. And I used the STAR model as sort of my way to categorize different things. And what I found was that each of the articles highlighted a different part of the organization design, the STAR model, the design principles. And so under the strategy, I had captured like the need for discernment and clarity could be a strategic focus in those particular articles. Under process, the last mile and process debt, and then AI clarity also had some process, well, a lot of process related focus in those. On the people side of things, the trust, resilience, and positive freedom focuses in the OD priorities and the positive versus negative articles, those kind of tied together. And under rewards and culture, I had identified intelligent OD, that was in the last article, and human-centered AI. Again, those were the priorities, the last mile and AI clarity. Those all kind of pulled together under that, had elements of the reward systems built into it. And then for structure, pretty much everything, I think, except for maybe the last article there. But I just kind of thought that was interesting, the way that those articles related to each other. So, Tanya, I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Well, Dennis, good job. Thank you so much for your time and energy preparing for today's session. Appreciate it very much. And I think you're planning to be back again to host in May, so something to look forward to. And you've set a precedent for yourself now. So, and then other words, just general announcements for this offering next month. It is the second day of our annual conference. So, we will not be hosting the discussion on the April newsletter. Lillian Duckert, who's here often, is looking to see if it's something that European ODF might want to go ahead and host. But I can't be on Zoom and on the floor in Pittsburgh at the same time on Wednesday afternoon of next month. So, if we don't see if you EODF is going to host it, we'll send out some information about it. Other words, we'll look forward to seeing everybody back together in May. We do have a couple of other events that'll be happening earlier in the month for that'll be on the calendar, a new one that we're adding here in the next couple of days. So you'll receive an announcement for that. That'll be on April 14th, and then there will be our usual coffee club on the third Tuesday of the month. So with that, I'm going to wish everybody a good day. We are right at the bottom of the hour. If you have any questions about ODF as a whole or upcoming events, I'm happy to stay on the line for a few moments and help with those. Other words, wish everyone a great rest of your Wednesday.
I want to say thank you to Ramona for attending as well. She's attending from Romania. So. So I'm sorry we didn't get to talk to you, but happy to have you here. Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Thank you.
And Tanya, I'm going to stick on for just a minute.
Sounds good. Jose, any questions for you or?
Just that I've joined the European ODF organization.
Good. So you're getting the newsletter in your
Yeah, I
inbox
thought that was
now
a better way of doing it, even though sometimes I can't always attend, but that's, and this is a fantastic way of doing it. Thank you very much, Dennis. Brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I'm going off. Cheers.
All right.